afternoon. It is one bell of the afternoon watch, and this is your Captain Joe up in the captain's chair on Voice of Vashon 101.9 on the FM band and streaming live all over the world, from Singapore on one side of the world to Stockholm on the other, all of the ships at sea, all of the aircraft in the air, all of Captain Joe's people who fall in for quarters for muster with me every week. So I have a couple of really good things that happened in the last week, to which I will get in just a moment. But as always, my greetings to all of my people, all of Captain Joe's people all over the world, and to those who are on the binnacle list. On the binnacle list, we've had some necessary procedures that have had to be delayed, a couple of imprecise diagnoses, which we are waiting now for some more precision so that we can place our worries and our concerns in the proper place. And so, as always is my custom, it is my wish and my desire and my command from the captain's chair that all hands who are on the binnacle list do that which they are advised to do by their positions. Let us remember that it is I who are in charge of our medical care, and so that we follow the advice that we are given so that we can leave the binnacle list and return to full duty. The first good thing that happened was that I just had a glorious long weekend with three of my grandchildren, teenage grandchildren that came down from, they were entrusted to my care by their parents in Fairbanks in Alaska. And they came with no instructions to me. They came with no advice to me. And if they had come with any such instructions or advice, I would have said, which I did not have to do, I need no instructions or advice. I have commanded literally thousands of young people, many of them still in their teens, and I think that together we can figure it out. Well, we had just a wonderful time. It was a time of talking. I got to pontificate at great length because these three young people, two girls and a young man, were very interested in the adventures that I had to recount, the places that I had been. And of course, they wanted to know a lot about my life with their grandmother. One of the things that we did was that we went together to Mary R's gravesite, and this time we took a couple of small Canadian flags because Mary R originally came from Canada. She held dual citizenship in both Canada and in the United States, and we put the flags out and we sat on the grass and we told stories and memories. One of the things that I learned, or I guess I had it confirmed in my thinking, was that Sailor and I do much better when we have people in the house for whom to care. And so the entire family from Fairbanks is coming for the 4th of July, and we are going to establish one of our campgrounds on one of the 4th of July celebrations. I think we had almost the entire family with us, and we had something like 10 or 12 tents set up on the campground. I went on our property. I went to United Portable Toilet Company and had them bring in a portable toilet, and I set up a watch list so that every kid who was able to perform a function, and I believe that kids can start performing functions for the good of the family at about one, every kid had a job, and the only rubbing and sticking point that we had during the entire wonderful time was that Mary R. was always very possessive of her kitchen, her galley. And so where things were to be found and where things were to be stowed away were of great concern to her. And although she was relieved of any of the work, she did not relieve herself of the supervision. And so anyway, for the 4th of July, we're going to have as many of the family together as we can. And all of this is to say that once again, I am just so pleased and proud of this family that has been so supportive, in particular through this last year. The second thing that happened was the recontact with some much-loved friends. It is always very special to me when I hear from friends with whom I have lost touch, and that losing touch is almost always of my own doing. I get a little bit intellectually lazy. I sometimes don't answer emails, electronic mails, as quickly as I should. Whatever the reason is, there are no excuses in life. I make none, but I do accept responsibility when that happens. And in any case, during the week, I had a lovely note from a retired Coast Guard family here on the magical Isle of Vashon. I responded to that note with an email, and I have invited them to come on to the broadcast in some broadcast in the future. All of this is to say that friendships are precious, and they are worth the work that it takes to keep up with them. And so, Laura and Ron, you and I will be together on this program. And I am thankful that you answered my email and that we will be able to have some good conversations together again. In news, maritime news all over the world, I have to give a warning, and I have to relate a maritime accident that has the potential for some serious damage for a good part of the world. But before I talk about that, I have to twist the tail of an institution which is in the United States of America is considered to be one of those which is above reproach. And I am about to reproach the National Geographic Society. National Geographic Society is over 100 years old. It was founded, I believe, one of the founding fathers was Alexander Graham Bell, and he was related in some way, and I haven't done the research on this to get the exact connection, but he was related in some way with a gentleman by the name of Gilbert Grosvenor. And so the National Geographic Society has proclaimed in a press release, which came to me today, and this proclamation says that the National Geographic Society, my own parenthetical insertion, is in its wisdom of over 100 years, close parenthesis, is declaring that instead of the four oceans that they have been talking about for over 100 years, they are now declaring that there is a fifth ocean, the Southern Ocean, the ocean that surrounds the continent of Antarctica. Well, old National Geographic Society, I am going to be the courier that brings you the good news that places like the Royal Geographical Society, Captain James Cook in the 1700s, who explored parts of the Southern Ocean, all of the explorers that have gone to the deep ice in the South, have not only known of the Southern Ocean, have not only known of the current that circulates around the continent of Antarctica, but also have called it the Southern Ocean for, I believe, maybe as long as 300 years. So National Geographic Society, you don't get cut any slack from your captain on this one. It is, to me, has been for ever since I had anything to do with Antarctica, that has been the Southern Ocean. And my final authority on this is my dear friend and late director at the Scott Polar Research Institute, Dr. John Heap, a companion of the Order of Saints Michael and George, a dear friend and a person who I miss every day. To him, it was also the Southern Ocean. And so I'm just delighted that you are finally catching up with the rest of the world, National Geographic Society. And that is what I have to say about that. The marine disaster that has the potential for causing a great deal of trouble in far away is a ship by the name of Express Pearl, X-Press, P-R-E-S-S, and then the word Pearl. She caught on fire about 2 weeks ago off of Colombo, Sri Lanka, which used to be, of course, Ceylon. And the fire could not be extinguished, and there are pieces of her which have now sunk. The difficulty with Express Pearl is that she was carrying a number of containers that were loaded with various kinds of chemicals. And she also was carrying bunker fuel. So she, bunker fuel, bunker means fuel that is used to propel the ship. That bunker fuel is sitting in her fuel tanks in her hull down on the bottom off of the entrance to the harbor of Colombo, the capital of Ceylon or of Sri Lanka. Inevitably, as time and currents work their way on that hull, those tanks are going to open up. The containers that are down there that contain the carboys of chemicals are going to open up, and those things are going to leach out into the water. Another thing about which I did not know anything until I read my catch-up on it this morning was that she also had a number of containers of little tiny plastic pellets. And some of these containers are broken loose. I'm not sure what the use of those pellets are. If anyone of Captain Joe's people who listen to me worldwide have a thought on that, you can get in touch with me, CaptainJoe@CenturyTel.net. That's my email address. You can send me a note. And I will do some more research on it to find out exactly what the purpose of all these little tiny pellets are. In any case, some of those containers have now broken loose and they're floating up on the beaches. But they also get ingested by creatures at the bottom of the food chain. And the article that I read about this in G Captain, which is one of my sources, and steering me on to G Captain, I thank Joe Leonard from the Coast Guard Channel, who was the one who pointed me in that direction in the first place. G Captain says that it's quite possible that these plastic pellets will work their way up through the food chain, maybe even unto humans, along with those Costco hot dogs for a dollar and a half, plus including a drink, or some of that other stuff that we take on board so enthusiastically. So none of this is to alarm anybody. It is just to let you know that once again, through almost certainly some kind of human error, the ship burned, sank, and she sank with a cargo which is certain to cause us some difficulties. But let's get back to something that is a little bit more positive that's happening in the maritime world, and that is that several shipping companies have won the Blue Skies Whale Tail Award. Captain Joe, What is the Whale Tail Award? Blue Skies Division. Glad am I that you asked. In the last year, there has been a program on the part of our federal government to encourage shipping companies to slow down as they go off the California coast. And from San Francisco south, the entrance to San Francisco Bay at the Golden Gate south, if they will average just 12 knots rather than the 18 to 20, depending on the speed of the ship, but if they'll slow down to an average of 12 knots, then they are doing several things. The first thing that they're doing is that they are being of particular good to the blues. The blues, of course, are the huge whales that are particularly endangered, and also the humpbacks and the fin whales. But also by slowing down, we cut down air pollution and we cut down fuel consumption. And all of these things working together can only be good. And these shipping companies, 16 of them, are now holders of the Blue Skies Whale Tail Award. Does that mean they get to fly a whale tail flag? I don't think so. I think not. I think that they get a nifty certificate, and they get the thanks of all of us who have made as part of our life sailing the deep oceans and who want the whales to return and to thrive, because, of course, they are mammals like we are. They breathe air like we do. And they occupy and use the same ocean that we do. So, a Bravo Zulu military talk for well done from the captain's chair to those shipping companies who have earned the Blue Skies Whale Tail Award. In the ongoing saga of the Ever Given, she remains at anchor in the small Bitter Lake in the near the Suez Canal, one end of the Suez Canal. And she's being held there by the Egyptian government until they can figure out how much she should pay as indemnity for the damage that was caused to the banks of the canal and also to the cargo flow, the flow of traffic through the Suez Canal. In the meantime, her company is alleging that it is not the fault of the captain, but in fact it is the fault of the Suez Canal Authority and the pilots who act as an advisor. You all will remember that in my tutorial on pilotage, I told you that in almost every place in the world, the pilot acts as an advisor to the captain, and the captain remains fully responsible for what happens with his ship. One of the exceptions to that, of course, is the Panama Canal. But not in the Suez Canal. The pilots are advisory. Furthermore, this particular captain elected to make the journey, and he elected not to bend on tugs fore and aft. So I do not think that there should be any acceptance of this theory on the part of the canal authority. To me, the captain is fully responsible. He made the decision to form up in that convoy. He made the decision to go through the canal without tugs bent on to wire fore and aft, and to help him keep under control. And having made those decisions, regardless of what the advice was that he got from the pilots, even if the pilots had said, "Captain, this is a safe thing for you to do," and carry on. So I'm reminded of one case where I relieved a pilot, and that was in Port-au-Prince, Haiti. And I was going into Port-au-Prince with my icebreaker for a weekend of R&R for my crew while we were being trained at Guantanamo Bay. And the pilot, I had to take a pilot, and Port-au-Prince is a straight shot from the Caribbean Ocean right into the piers, the berths at in Port-au-Prince. Not very complicated, no channel, anything like that. And pilot said, "Captain, just take her straight on in." And I looked at the chart, and my navigator already looked at the chart, and the navigator said, "Captain, you pilot wants you to go over this shoal, which is showing 28 feet, and right now we're drawing 30 feet. And I said, "Pilot, I'm not going over that shoal." And he said, "Oh, Captain, you can do that. Plenty of water, plenty of water." And so I instructed my officer of the deck to kindly inform pilot that his services were no longer needed, and for him to be courteously, gently removed from my bridge so that I didn't even have to have anything to do with him. And I went around the shoal safely and put her alongside in the berth in Port-au-Prince. So even if the pilot had said to the captain, "You can do this, it's safe, Captain," and he accepted that advice, he's still responsible, he's still accountable, and that should be enough of that. The Navy has put out a statement not too long ago, our Navy, U.S. Navy, to in more of a response to the accidents that we've discussed frequently on this program, and in particular those of USS McCain and USS Fitzgerald, two sister ships, or not identical sisters, but they're in the same class and of destroyers. And both of them have had tragic collisions, and both of those collisions were attributable quite properly to human mistakes, lack of training, and a number of other factors. But in each case, as is always the case, dear ones, the captain remains responsible and accountable. And so in partial response to that, the Navy put out a statement. And the statement said something like this: "The Navy is to chart a new course after a rash of problems." That term "rash of problems" is a euphemism for a whole series of mistakes, and culminating in the tragic and disastrous and total fire in Bonhomme Richard. Bonhomme Richard, by the way, is they have now started to take her apart. I have seen photographs of my Northwind when she was being scrapped. And if you want to have a broken heart, a captain's broken heart comes when he looks at one of the ships that he has taken into far places and some danger and many adventures, and she never let him down, to see her being taken down to her underwear and further. So Bonhomme Richard, I don't know whether her captain is in a position to, because of course he is no longer her captain, she's been decommissioned, but in any case, that was one of the most recent accidents, the terrible fire which caused in her being stricken from the list of the Navy list. And so this new course includes such things as prescribing to captains the amount of rest that his crew should get. Now, we have mandated crew rest requirements for aircraft. When I was carrying helicopters, and I had helicopter capability in two of my ships, and I carried them as a regular part of ship's company in Northwind. And so there were mandatory crew rest requirements when your aircraft commanders and crew members had to go in the bag. That's why we carried, for two aircraft, we carried four complete crews, including four fully qualified aircraft commanders, so that you always had a crew that was available and had time before they had to go in the bag. The Navy is carrying this to farther to try to prescribe and to say that captains have to make sure that their crews have a certain minimum amount of rest. Well, there are two things wrong with this. First of all, a mission at sea can go on for days and days and days. Search and rescue missions in a large search can go on for a long, long time. And instead of saying, I have to stop searching because my crew is tired, what the prudent captain does is not only does he husband his stores for the long voyage in terms of food, but he also husbands the ability of his crew to manage long times without rest. I'm now running over my time, and I've only begun to pontificate on this subject, so I will carry it on further, maybe in the next broadcast. So it comes time for me now to, as I always do, from the captain's chair, for those of you who have people for whom you are responsible and accountable, love them a lot, give them all a great big hug from the captain up in the captain's chair, and take good care of them until we meet again. For this is your Captain Joe up in the captain's chair on station and watching properly.